The third case this morning is United States v. Soban Sinyomono.
May it please the Court, Counsel for the Government. Today I'm asking this Court to decide that the 25-year sentence that was handed down to Soban Sinyomono exceeded the scope of 3553A and was more than sufficient to meet the goals set forth in the sentencing statute. The reality is that on the day that Soban Sinyomono was sentenced, he was on that day the same way he was the day he was born. He was a man who presented himself to the court with intellectual disability. And the Supreme Court has consistently held since 2002 when it handed down Atkins versus Virginia, and most recently in May when it handed down Hall versus Florida, that persons who have those type of disabilities should be afforded some sort of leniency when it comes to sentencing. Now, it is...
Now, I have difficulty understanding your argument on that. Those cases were decided under cruel and unusual evaluation with respect to the imposition of the death penalty. Yet, despite the determination that the death penalty can't be applied, those defendants are serving life sentences. So I don't see how that fits into your argument here, where the intellectual disability is considered in some way, but it doesn't mitigate all punishment.
That is correct, Your Honor. It does not mitigate all punishment, and it is true that in the death penalty context, where people who have murdered and taken the lives of other people are sitting in prison for life, they haven't avoided punishment, but they're not given the more harsh punishment. I think that while this isn't an Eighth Amendment case, and we're not arguing that it's cruel and unusual, the dicta in the cases is instructive, if you will. It's very clear from the language in Atkins versus Virginia and Hall versus Florida that what the Supreme Court has stated is that we don't view people with intellectual disabilities through the same lens as we view people who have their ordinary faculties.
Relative to execution,
but if we apply that in the general context, a person like Mr. Sinyomono, who presents himself before the court for a bank robbery case where a gun was carried, the question is, how should he be viewed through the lens under 3553A? And so if we take a person who has their ordinary faculties, a person who has their ordinary abilities, and we say that presumptively, if you will, a guideline sentence is appropriate, it would seem that then a sentence below the guideline range is appropriate for a person like Mr. Sinyomono, who does not present himself to the court with the same faculties and the same abilities as someone else.
Is that the only aspect of sentencing that the intellectual disability would go toward? In other words, couldn't the fact that his intellectual disability affects his ability to control his impulses have some bearing on what effect his conduct would have on the public? And if he shows a long pattern of the inability to control his impulses, that is, walking into banks and robbing them.
So long pattern is relative, and I can understand the concern of the court. The reality is, on the first bank robbery case that he had, he received a 7-year sentence. This sentence is 25 years. It's more than 3 times the amount of that sentence. That is far more than what is necessary.
He returned to a bank within how long after he was released on that
sentence? It was approximately 5 months, Your Honor.
Well,
it was fairly
still on supervised release under close supervision.
He was on supervised release, that is correct. And there is no question, again, that he should be punished, but the reality is a substantial sentence was sought by defense counsel as well. I requested a sentence that would have taken into account the harsh nature of the career offender guideline, given the circumstances, and took into consideration his intellectual disabilities, requested an 11-year sentence. Now, there's 14 years between 11 years and 25 years, and 25 years isn't even the low end of the advisory guideline range. Yet he was given 25 years.
Nor is it the high end.
nor is it the high end, but it certainly seems that if we're applying this particular guideline and we're stating that this is appropriate for someone like myself who would walk into a bank and would do the and participate in the exact same activity as Mr. Sonny Manola, surely someone like him should be given a break in a sense. Now, in the 28J letter that was filed by the government, they analogized this to the United States versus Dinelli. I'm familiar with the Dinelli case because I represented her for a slight amount of time while in Indianapolis, and the issue there is distinctly different. First, Ms. Dinelli had mental health issues that could be treated with medication. There is no medication that would ever be able to correct Mr. Sonny Manola's his condition. He is intellectually disabled. From the time he came from his mother's womb, that was his reality in life. When he came to the United States and went to school, he was in a class with kids who wore mitts and helmets because they are, that is the type of person that he is. If you look at him, he's very slight in nature. His head appears very small. He is clearly a person who has an intellectual disability. There's no question there. There's not a question about that. There is a sentence that is far below, I would submit, but at a minimum at the low end of the guidelines. There's a sentence that is much far below 25 years that is sufficient but not greater than necessary to meet all of the goals that are articulated in 3553A. 3553A certainly accounts for the need to protect the public, but it also requires that we necessarily consider the history and characteristics of Mr. Sonny Manola. That's what did not happen here. And it's clear that that didn't happen, because if we took into consideration everything, including the need to protect the public, and as a member of the public, I get that. If we take that into consideration, you don't have to hand down a sentence of 25 years to meet those objectives. And that's why we're asking this court to reverse the sentence that was handed down to Mr. Sonny Manola, because it exceeded what is allowed in 3553A. And because it exceeded what's allowed in 3553A, it was inappropriate, and Mr. Sonny Manola should be given another sentencing. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Coyne.
Good morning. May it please the court, Ms. Scott. My name is Jonathan Koenig, and I appear on behalf of the United States this morning. A little more than a year ago, the defendant walked into a bank in Wisconsin wearing a disguise and terrorized the people working there into giving him $8,000 in cash. He commanded the tellers not to use dye packs. He calmly walked out of the bank, got into a car, and led police on a high-speed chase before being apprehended. He did all of this while he was on supervised release, and as Judge Tinder noted, within a relatively short period of time after being released from prison.
You don't dispute that he is low IQ, though, do you?
I do not, Your Honor. I do question whether he is mentally retarded. That's the characterization in the reply brief.
Well, the term is intellectual disability now.
That is the term, the preferred term in the profession. And
which profession?
The psychiatric, I guess, and psychological.
Medical profession is what
medical,
you're talking
yes, sir.
About.
I'd like to come back to that point a little bit later because I do.
I guess what I'm getting at is
regardless of the terminology,
it has some bearing on whether he seemed calm and reluctant.
I think the offense conduct demonstrates a level of awareness that he was engaged in wrongdoing. And it also, it may have been a minimal amount of planning, but it did involve some planning as well that suggests an ability to adapt and function. Unfortunately, as a criminal. The sentencing judge in this case, after considering the offense conduct, which I've just described, and the defendant's cognitive deficits, imposed a sentence right in the middle of the advisory range. Ms. Scott argues that sentence was, quote, wholly unjustified because of the intellectual deficits of her client. Now, according to Ms. Dolezal, Dr. Dolezal's report, the defendant was at the low end of the borderline range. I don't believe she gives a number, an IQ number. as you're probably aware from reading the recent capital cases, the trend is not to give exclusive emphasis on the number in any event. But low end of the borderline range, it's not clear to me that he would even have diminished capacity, as that term is used in the guidelines. The guidelines, as you probably recall, in Section 5K2.13 discuss diminished capacity in terms of not being able to understand the wrongfulness of your conduct or control your behavior. There's nothing in the Dolezal report that I see which suggests that his intellectual deficits made him unable to appreciate the wrongfulness of robbing a bank.
I just said 97% will perform, of his peers will perform better on cognitive tests than he will.
There's no question that he's limited, Your Honor. I would point out, again, in addition to just clarifying that that he's borderline and not disabled or retarded, that according to Dolezal's report, it was a mixed bag. She says on page 9 of her report that his nonverbal abilities were significantly more well developed than his verbal skills. So you may have an individual who can't articulate things very well, but perhaps understands relationships and conduct. Again, the offense conduct suggests that he understood very well what he was doing and that it was wrong. But even if this defendant has diminished capacity, as that term was understood under the guidelines, and even if that makes him less culpable in a sort of a moral sense, it also arguably makes him more dangerous because he's less able to control his conduct, if in fact he has diminished capacity. And Judge Posner made that point for the court in the Garthis opinion, that this intellectual deficits can cut both ways. The diminution in capacity, to the extent it makes somebody more likely to commit crimes in the future, is an aggravating factor, not a mitigating factor in the post-Booker world. But again, even if we have a defendant with diminished capacity, as traditionally understood, the sentencing judge was entitled to give greater weight to the need to protect the public, and his comments very clearly reflect that protecting the public was a paramount concern for him. And that weighing that goes on under 3553 is given great deference by this court. We would ask you to defer to that balancing in this case as well and to affirm the sentence. Are there any further questions?
I don't believe so. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
How much time? 2 minutes. Scott.
Your Honors, to be clear, we are not asking for Mr. Sonny Manola to avoid punishment for his actions when he walked into the bank and, in the words of the government, terrorized the employees inside. What I'm asking this court to do is to take a look at all of the critical factors, all of the meaningful factors that are that the court is required to look at when it comes to determining the appropriate sentence, and to find that Mr. Sonny Manola's intellectual disability combined with everything else renders the 25-year sentence too harsh. We believe that that is the case. There is no question that Mr. Sonny Manola suffers from intellectual disability that is severe.
How old was he at the time of sentencing?
How old was he at the time of sentencing? I think he was 29 at the time of sentencing, and I may be off by a couple of years, but any significant sentence leaves him in custody for an extreme amount of time. He'll be considerably older. Even if the court would have given the 11-year sentence requested by defense counsel, he would be significantly older. He will still have the support of his family, and they'll continue to try to do what they tried to help him maintain his behavior. He made another mistake, and it is unfortunate. The reality is that his intellectual disability contributed to that in some way, shape, or form. He should be given leniency because the ability to appreciate a 25-year sentence should be factored into the court's decision to hand down something that harsh. And since it's been determined by a professional that he doesn't have the ability to appreciate a sentence that harsh, it seems that when we consider all of the relevant factors, a sentence below 25 years is appropriate. Thank you.
Nice to see you again, Ms. Scott.
Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.